But we start the news brief off first with Bill Belichick, who's always a loquacious man. And I'm sure he was thrilled to talk about the possibility of the Patriots landing free agent DeAndre Hopkins. This courtesy of Nesson.
DeAndre Hopkins now a free agent, someone who spoke very highly of. Do you guys have any interest in pursuing him?
Yeah, I'm not going to comment on players that aren't on this team.
What did you really expect? I know if you're a media member, you have to ask that question. And I think, you know, the toughest job in the NFL in terms of being a media member, the toughest beat has to be covering Bill Belichick. I know that they've given you so many memories and so much controversy the last 20 years. But do you know how many times you have to go to a Belichick press conference and it's just a waste of everybody's time? I went to training camp last year. It was joint practices. Patriots and the Panthers. And I usually have a good idea of how to get a good response out of someone that's answering questions. And, like, I've had Greg Popovich before give me good responses. And he gives, like, no one good responses. So I thought in the Belichick playbook, just ask him about someone else on the other team. And I know that he used to like Baker Mayfield. And at the time, Baker Mayfield was the Carolina Panthers. And I was like, Bill, you're getting ready to go up against the Carolina Panthers. They just brought in Baker Mayfield. And I said something to the idea of, what do you think with the way that you've talked about in the past that he could bring to Carolina this year?
You know, I'm just focused on, you know, the guys on my team. And, you know, we're just trying to trim down our roster and do what's in the best interest of our football team.
And I sat there. And another reporter knew who I was. He came up to me afterwards and he goes, did you really come all the way down from New York to just get basically nothing from Belichick? There were other reasons why I was there too, but geez, like, what do you expect there? Hey, Bill, you're interested in DeAndre Hopkins.
You know, we're just going to focus on everyone that's in our building right now. And that's part of our team with the New England Patriots.
Are the Patriots interested in DeAndre Hopkins? Yes. Are they going to be able to go out there and get him? I don't know. I don't know where the relationship is with Bill O'Brien, as there was a lot of ugliness there when Bill O'Brien forced DeAndre Hopkins out when he was the head coach and GM of the Houston Texans. And I don't know how DeAndre Hopkins views the Patriots. I don't know what DeAndre Hopkins wants. Do you want to be the number one? Do you want to go to the place that gives you the best chance to go win a Super Bowl? Do you want to go to the place that's going to give you the most amount of money? Because you go to New England, you'll be the number one. I don't know if they're going to give you the most money, and you know that there are better teams that could go win you a Super Bowl. Like, if Brady's still there, different story, but Brady is no longer there. Let's go to John Lynch. He was on SiriusXM NFL Radio, and John Lynch had a little update on Brock Purdy.
But, you know, there are certain markers that you hit. He was 12 weeks out, and that was meant it was time to throw. He did so and responded really well. He's just had one session thus far, but, you know, we're incredibly encouraged by that. And Brock's a worker. If you give him a task, he's gonna do everything in his power. You know, so these are just timelines, and timelines are just that. They're guidelines. But, you know, when I say tracking well, it's just he's hitting all his markers. And it doesn't surprise us because he's putting in the work. And as for best case scenario, we're just going to kind of take it as it comes. But I mean, the hope is he's ready for training camp. The hope is he's ready for the regular season. But what I can tell you is, you know, I mentioned Trey, I mentioned Sam. We feel good about that position holistically. So we're not going to do anything to put, you know, Brock not in a, you know, in a situation where he's not fully healed. And that means not just getting back, but getting reps under your belt, the whole deal. So we'll take it as it comes. As we're doing, he's working incredibly hard, and the early returns are really good. So hitting all the timelines.
I love how at the end he throws in, yeah, we feel great about the entire quarterback room. Give me a break. Stop trying to hype up Sam Darnold. He's not even getting the first team reps right now. And if you love Trey Lance so much, I know you moved mountains to go get him. He, without question, be your starting quarterback. You know you want Brock Purdy to be the guy. As he even said in that interview, Brock is still the leader in the clubhouse. But it's good that Brock Purdy's throwing the football. I read a report last week that was supposed to be June 2nd, so happened a few days earlier. And if he could be ready for the start of training camp, which is right around the corner, That would be great news, but I'm very curious to see what Brock Purdy does this year. You know, at some point, whether he's healthy or not week one, that I don't know. I'm leaning more towards yes, that he will be than he's not, just because he's ahead of schedule, it seems. But I just want to see, can he make it through the entire season and actually keep up the level of play that he was playing at the end of last season in that small amount of time, but very important amount of time when he took over for Jimmy Garoppolo as the quarterback for the 49ers. Here is Deshaun Watson. Here could be a potential reunion of Deshaun Watson throwing the football to DeAndre Hopkins. This courtesy of Odyssey Sports.
Well, me and D-Hop, we just naturally talk. We've been talking since, you know, the Houston days, and then also whenever he left for Arizona, we were always talking. So, you know, he's always been a brother of mine since I was coming out of high school. Our connection, our relationship has always been great. And I know there's a lot of things swirling around in the media of, you know, him possibly coming to Cleveland. And, you know, for me, my answer to that is, of course, we would love to have him. He knows that. We had a lot of connections, but, you know, that's kind of out of my range of things, of kind of coordinating things. So all I can do is, you know, make a call and see what happens, let AB do the rest.
The Browns weren't originally on the top five likeliest destinations for me in terms of getting DeAndre Hopkins. I thought the Jets would be in consideration, the Patriots would be in consideration, Buffalo, Kansas City, and also the Baltimore Ravens. But the more you think about it, that's a good wide receiving room. You got Amari Cooper, who's very underrated. You have Elijah Moore. You could use a DeAndre Hopkins, and that's a very good division as you're trying to close the gap from the Bengals and the Ravens and the other two teams in that division, and the Steelers and the Browns. And you look at this AFC, it's loaded. You could use a little extra juice. You could use a player like DeAndre Hopkins, and it wouldn't really take that much time for him to fit in, even though it's a new team. He knows the quarterback almost better than anybody. Michael Malone, the head coach of the Denver Nuggets, was on Part of My Take, and he discussed his relationship. You may recall after they swept the Lakers and won the Western Conference, the Jokic brothers were throwing Mike Malone up in the air as if he was like a rag doll. Here is Michael Malone looking back on his relationship with Nikola Jokic's brothers.
It must also be nice having the Jokic brothers just, you know, relatively courtside at a lot of games, so you don't have to have an enforcer on the court all the time. You just got the big Serbian boys standing up, just staring daggers at the other team and at the refs, and you just point at them. They're like, yeah, listen to these guys, please.
Well, it's great to know I got two security guards that got my back at all times. And I can remember Nikola's rookie season. I think we were playing Phoenix, and Tyson Chandler and Nikola got into it. And out of the corner of my eye, I see this very large object moving at a high rate of speed down towards the court. And one of his brothers was about to run onto the court and handle the business with Tyson Chandler. Thankfully, security got to him before that happened. Yeah. But they are passionate. They love their brother. They love the Nuggets. And thankfully, I'm on their good side.
Yeah.
So I know they're in my corner, which is great to know.
Tyson Chandler, not like he's a guard. Tyson Chandler's a big man. Last time he played in the league, he was listed as 7 feet tall and 240 pounds. And think about it, your brother, who's a pretty big dude in Nikola Jokic, anytime someone tries to go after him, whether it's that owner of the Suns, Matt Ishbia, remember a few years ago after you had the Jokic play on Morris, all the Heat were like lining up outside of the Nuggets locker room, like looking on in, which was a very funny image. You know the Joker brothers are coming. You know they're going to be right around the corner. I'll say this. If I was ever stuck in a dark alley and I had one phone call, I think I'm placing a phone call to the Jokic brothers, because I would trust them up against a fight, I think, against almost anybody. Man, you're right if you're Mike Malone. Good that you have him on your side. Here is former Major League Baseball player Doug Mankiewicz. Remember him had a great glove at first base. I didn't know this, that he was high school teammates with Alex Rodriguez, but I guess they don't have all that great of a relationship anymore, because Mankiewicz put A-Rod on blast. This is from last week, courtesy of Foul Territory TV.
Like, if it's a baseball study, if we're doing stuff for Westminster, our high school, yeah, if he's not sleeping at the table. Like, they honored our coach for his 3 millionth win, and there he is in his Timberwolves shirt, sleeping in a chair. And it's like, come on, man. Like, you know, I always said that he's going to die a lonely man, because, you know what, this whole, like, you know, father of the year stuff, God bless him for his daughters, because it's going to come a long way. But it's like, you're just trying to get into heaven now. Like, and that's the part. Like, I'm still friends with my high school team. We still text often, not as often as we should, but we still text group thread, constantly badgering each other. And it's just, you know, he's just distanced from it. And that's, I don't care how good or how great you become and how far your career goes. You never forget your high school dudes. Like, that's just like your high school and your college teammates are like, they're brothers till the end. And we still talk and we still shoot the shit. But like, you know, he's just nowhere to be found. Even when we do high school stuff for our coach, it's like, he's just, you know, like I said, I have a picture of him sleeping at the table in his Timberwolves shirt. I'm like, are you serious? Like, go Wolves.
Here's the bottom line. I thought that was low class by Doug Minkiewicz. Like, don't get me wrong. I get it. A-Rod's not the most popular person. He's done a better job restoring his image. And Alex Rodriguez has done a lot of bad things. He's not the most genuine person on the face of the earth. But I kind of like A-Rod. I do. I know that's not a popular thing to say, but to get so mad at somebody because he's just not talking to, like, his high school teammates anymore. You know, there's a lot of people I went to high school with that I'm not still, like, best pals with. It just happens. It's part of life. I know there's that bond playing sports, and especially with how elite athletes these guys were, but to say that he's going to die a lonely man, that's pretty low class by Doug Minkiewicz. I don't know what actually happened behind the scenes in the interview. He even said it. So they were honoring their old baseball coach, and A-Rod fell asleep. Like, yeah, not a good look for A-Rod as he was in a Minnesota Timberwolves jacket, and he fell asleep, but give me a break. You gonna say he's gonna die a lonely man? Like, I get it. He's not married right now, but he has daughters. From all things, it looks like he's a good father. It's kind of lame. Now, A-Rod did respond to this, and he was talking to USA Today Sports earlier today. Here it is.
I have to ask about your former teammate, Doug Minkiewicz. He it seems like he took to the airways and kind of had these out of left field comments about you. Not diving into it, but how do you deal with that, or do you kind of chalk it up to just somebody with a microphone looking to make the news?
Yeah, Mackenzie, that was actually strange, because I've always considered Doug a friend, and I was shocked and surprised. My daughter sent me the articles, my mom, my brother, all people that really liked Doug, and I was very close with his mom and dad. But look, at the end of the day, one thing I'll never do is speak poorly about any of my teammates, especially a high school teammate, so I wish him well.
Yeah, A-Rod can't be surprised by this. I don't think this came out of nowhere with Doug Minkiewicz. If it did, then it's even more of a worse look for Minkiewicz. But that's a classy job by A-Rod, just taking the high road there. And he got asked the questions. You have to give a response, but it's kind of beneath Alex Rodriguez to even have to comment on what Doug Minkiewicz said. Here's Troy Aikman on all this speculation that maybe Tom Brady, who's going to be a minority owner of the Las Vegas Raiders, could end up playing for the Las Vegas Raiders this year. It's not going to happen because the NFL won't approve it. All 32 owners would have to agree. But here is Troy Aikman.
Well, I wouldn't I don't want to speak for Tom. I wouldn't rule anything out. He obviously, you know, has a relationship with the head coach. He knows the offense. He'll keep himself in great shape. I'm a big Jimmy Garoppolo fan, so I'm really pulling for him. But I would bet that just nothing's off the table as far as, you know, what may occur during the season or
a lot
or
going
what
on in the Bay Area and
be.
The sports world. So let's go to a longtime Bay Area talk
know.
Show
Those
host. You can check out his YouTube channel, Damon
really
Bruce Plus, and also
for him,
make sure you listen to the Damon Bruce podcast.
Damon,
how you been?
Right.
But everybody else can. We can.
Well,
if that goes true that he's going to be minority owner of the Raiders,
let me start you off with the Warriors. I have my theory.
It's pretty simple.
Why do you think
he's not going to play?
I know this is not a surprise. Anyone's been talking about the entire year, but why do you think Bob Myers actually resigned?
According to Mike Florio,
I really
all 32 teams would have to unanimously vote that it's okay for Brady to play. And there's a lot of reasons why a lot of teams would say no. Number one would be that Brady's kicked almost everybody's ass for the last 20 years. You finally get him out, and you have a reason to make sure that he's not going to be able to play. And
you
think all 32 owners
that
have been on the wrong side of Tom Brady are going to be like, yeah, let's go have him be the next quarterback of the Raiders when he's also a minority owner. That's a news brief. This is at Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. We'll take a timeout when we come on back in 5 minutes. We'll talk about all the latest in the Bay Area with Damon Bruce
throughout the last dozen years. But what he also appreciates is time with his family. I think being a semblance of a normal person with a normal schedule who isn't talking or taking phone calls from Joe Lacob, who is the Warriors owner, and Zach, he's not a type A personality. He's a type A plus personality. You know, I mean, Joe Lacob, I think, is a tough guy to work for because the expectations are so constantly high, and he's very involved. So I really think more than anything else, it's burnout, and he realizes, you know, he's got enough money made to step away. He's got a reputation that takes his opportunities basically to infinity in any direction. Go to Barbados with your family for a couple months. Come back, enjoy yourself for a little while, enter your 50s in a new opportunity, work through your retirement somewhere else. And I think more than anything else, he's really smart, and it's always good to be the first person off, not the sinking ship. The Warriors are not a sinking ship, but they have reached the apex, the zenith of the dynasty, and I think he realizes that it's not going to get much better, so maybe it just is, all things considered, the right time for him to leave.
You talked about how demanding Joe Lacob can be and his personality. There's also a lot being made about his son's role. What's your understanding of that and how that factored into the Bob Myers decision?
So I really don't think it played much of a factor, and I'd be very surprised to hear Kirk Lacob be named the next general manager of the Golden State Warriors. It's going to take a little bit more of someone who has done this or has achieved more, and I think that all the good political capital that Joe Lacob has earned with Warriors fans would just get spent on that one decision. It would be wildly unpopular. And to be completely honest, if I were Kirk Lacob, I'd like to be involved, but I wouldn't want to wear the moniker of "these are my decisions." I wouldn't want to be the GM in training. I'd want to be the future owner in training. So to me, you know, you're almost demoting yourself by saying I want to be the next general manager when you're in line to be the next owner of the Golden State Warriors.
Damon Bruce, my theory on this for a while has been, we know how tight Bob Myers has been with this core. I think he just didn't have it in him to be the guy to tell Clay or Draymond that they're no longer wanted there, because he had to know down deep, no matter what he said publicly, that there needed to be some serious changes if they wanted to further expand this championship window with Steph still being an elite player.
So of all the "this might be the reasons," I would say that that carries a bit of actual credibility to it. I don't think Bob wants to be the bearer of bad news to the players that he has hung four banners with and has an incredibly unique personal relationship with. I'm not saying that he's not, you know, the kind of guy who can't deliver the hard message, but why be that guy? And I do think that maybe there is a little something to it. And if he's really looking at how his burnout would become a total crash and burnout, maybe that's what he saw on the horizon. I don't think you're completely unfounded. I don't think it's the key, but I think it's an element of why he made that decision.
So with Bob Myers out, and they'll have a new general manager, and we'll see who that's going to be, the next person you turn to is Steve Kerr. How much longer do you think Steve Kerr is going to want to do this, as long as Steph is there?
I would say that the two of their careers are linked together. I would be surprised to learn anything other than that. But look, Bob Myers is the first domino to fall. And now the question of really who will be the last man standing between Klay Thompson, Draymond Green, Steph Curry, and Steve Kerr, it's going to be fascinating to watch it all play out. I think we know who the last two guys in the room will be, but who will then be the last guy in the room between Curry and Kerr? I wonder, you know, we've been talking about how being career warriors would be, you know, just feathers in the cap of you know, Steve Kerr as a coach and Curry as a player, and to not go on to have the, you know, Michael Jordan, Washington Wizards phase of his career, to be a career Laker like Kobe was, to be a career Warrior. I think that carries incredible value to Steph's overall legacy, especially when he's always measured fairly or not against LeBron James and all the bouncing around that LeBron has done. It would be just one other thing that, you know, those who would argue Steph Curry is the more influential player of his generation would be able to throw into the argument at the end of the bar. Well, he never left the Warriors. All the great players had to come to him. He didn't go anywhere. And I think Steph sees the value in that. I really do. But we do now absolutely know that Bob Myers leaving doesn't make this thing stay together longer than it should. I think it makes it come apart maybe a year or two earlier than it might have. And it will be fascinating to see what Kerr and Curry do either, you know, together or independently.
I know he has a player option. Do you think, Damon Bruce, that Draymond Green's back on the team next year?
Well, his relationship with Bob Myers is a very special and close relationship, and I wonder if Bob's decision has any effect on that decision. I'm going to say and vote no, it doesn't. I think, again, Draymond is prescribing to the being a career warrior or remaining with Steph Curry is the best thing for my career. And I do believe that he has been such a key to unlocking Steph Curry's greatness. I mean, the two of them play so well off of each other. Draymond can see Steph no matter where he is on the floor, whether he can see him or not. They have a feel for each other. So, Zach, I think at the very least, he exercises his player option to come back next year. And if the news is Draymond Green has opted out, I would say that the headline after the reaction to, oh, Draymond has opted out, might very well be agrees to a 3-year deal with the Golden State Warriors. Opts back in at a better price for a longer deal. I could see that happen. Now, if you tell me he's going to be a Laker and that's the way it's going to go down now because he's upset that Bob Myers isn't in the room, I mean, maybe, Zach, I don't know. I can't get into anyone's head here, but I think that there's, you know, these guys, whether they're right about it or not, remains to be seen, but they still believe they have work to do here together in Golden State. And with Klay Thompson having a $46 million contract, and it's his last year, I think there's going to be a sense of urgency to if there can be a return to the NBA Finals. It's got to be now.
I also think they got to get rid of Klay. Like, I think they got to get rid of either Klay or Draymond, because you look at it, neither of those guys, in my opinion, are number two in a championship team anymore.
Well, you know, I don't know if Draymond ever wore that moniker.
Sure.
For a moment, Klay Thompson, it was assigned to him. I don't know how comfortably or naturally he wore it, because I just, you know, Klay needs to understand what he has become and the evolution of a player coming off of two catastrophic injuries, the Achilles. You know, the ACLs are tied together like broken shoelaces these days, but that Achilles injury was a massive one for Klay. And the fact that he's come back from it with very similar career splits and shooting splits than he had before it, it is very, very impressive. But he's not the defender that he used to be. He can't burn gas quite like he used to, Zach. And I really think that, yes, a redefined role for Klay Thompson is the best way to extend a career. And every night two guard in the NBA is just, I don't know if he's cut out to be that. I will also say, whenever you want to start doubting Klay Thompson, he'll rip off maybe one of the best months of his career. And that's what he did this very past February. He had one of the best months of his entire career. It is still within him. He just cannot summon it on a nightly basis in ways that he used to.
Has there been a name, Damon Bruce, that Dubs fans have kind of rallied around so far? Like, you hear all the trade speculation of a Jaylen Brown or maybe a Damian Lillard. I don't know how you actually make that work, but has there been a popular name floated out there that you go, okay, that's the guy? You move on from some of these other guys that have won championships to pair up with Steph to try to extend that championship window.
People keep using the name Pascal Siakam. I mean, I think that LeBron is a bridge too far, and based on just, you know, luxury tax implications right now, the hamstrung nature of what the CBA is going to do. I mean, the Warriors don't even have the room to add a mid-level exception coming up this year. It is going to be the core as it remains, and then people playing for minimums around them. It is going to be an extraordinarily difficult job for the next general manager to come in and piece together how this is all supposed to fit into a championship picture. Look, Damian Lillard, having grown up in Oakland, he's the kind of guy whose loyalty I actually think is a wonderful quality, but it might be working against him at this point. Let's see what the Trailblazers do on the draft the 22nd, I believe the draft is. So, you know, here's the thing, Zach, with the draft coming up in a matter of weeks, the Warriors before they do anything, before they consider a trade, before they consider who they're picking. They need to get this next general manager installed. I don't think you can leave this to Bob Myers to do, and he even joked around that he was never particularly good at drafting, and I think that was a little tongue-in-cheek in his goodbye press conference, but there's also some evidence that, you know, when he had the biggest bullseye to hit in his drafting process, he selected James Wiseman, and obviously that did not work out for the Golden State Warriors. So I think that they need to move speedily on this replacement. Mike Dunleavy Jr. going outside of the organization is something. I mean, they have to have the quickest no stone left unturned search for a general manager, I think, in recent NBA history, because you want the next guy making this decision, not the outgoing GM.
If you're right, Damon Bruce, that Draymond's back on this team this year, does that mean Jordan Poole's definitely off of it?
I wouldn't say that. I know that there's a lot of he had a terrible playoffs, and Jordan Poole went from Bella the Ball to kind of wearing a dunce cap within two postseasons of each other. But here's the thing. He's a 24-year-old kid who can get you 20 a night, and he's a homegrown talent that they drafted. I do not think that internally they want to move off of Jordan Poole as much as some fans have brought up, as much as some conspiracy theorists between the Jordan Poole Draymond Green incident want to suggest. I don't think there's nearly the amount of drama there that is sold to people, and I know that that's bad for sports talk radio, and I'm sorry that I said that on your show, but I really think the cooler heads are going to prevail in the Jordan Poole experiment. I think he's a Warrior for at least one more year.
Damon Bruce, let's go to the 49ers, and then I just want to bring up one point on the A's. I was talking about earlier, it's incredible because the 49ers have been so successful and their roster is incredible. And as bright of an offensive mind Kyle Shanahan is, he still has not been able to crack the code in the starting quarterback position. You know that it's going to be Brock Purdy whenever he's healthy, and Lynch gave the encouraging update today. What do you expect out of Brock Purdy this year? Because I know he played really well down the stretch in that limited sample size, but yet again, it was a limited sample size.
It sure was. I mean, I don't know what you can really expect from someone who has, you know, not even started a dozen professional football games. I don't know if you can really enter with an expectation, but what he does is he provides the element of yes, chef, that I really think Kyle Shanahan wants in his quarterback. Like a French kitchen, the only thing the head chef wants to hear anyone else in that kitchen say is yes, chef. And I think that Brock Purdy can deliver an accurate ball. And he is a 3-5-7-step drop quarterback, and he is going to yes chef Kyle Shanahan and only improvise when running for his life is now part of the equation. I think that Kyle almost talked himself into the illusion of wanting more than he really wants when he made the draft pick of Trey Lance, who, you know, showed up raw, was behind the actual ability to see a football field, couldn't, you know, the number one missing ingredient from his resume was playing time, and then it became, remained, I should say, a missing ingredient as Jimmy Garoppolo stayed, and then right when they hand the reins to Trey Lance in week two, he breaks his ankle after playing in a monsoon in Chicago, and the whole thing is just a really bad start to his career. Now, I think that the Niners legitimately think that Trey Lance could be a player, whether a player for them or a player to be traded. I think that there has to be concerns of Brock being able to repeat what we saw, which was high-caliber quarterback execution in Kyle's offense. And remember, Kyle's offense, the entire thing operates in a 17-yard box. It's 15 yards down the field and 2 yards behind the line of scrimmage. That's where the whole offense takes place. And I think that, you know, Brock Purdy is more cut out to execute it. And I'll just tell you right now that Sam Darnold has never been in a good football situation, and he now is. Let's see if Kyle's always wonderlust quarterbacking eye doesn't eventually settle on Sam Darnold, especially if Brock's elbow were to take a step backwards from it being surgically repaired or there is a hiccup along his development of coming back. I think we might hear from Sam Darnold before this is all said and done.
I'm telling you, that's not going to end properly. I understand what you're saying about the environment, and it's the best roster that he's had. I've never seen Sam Darnold give me five tangible moments that ever suggest to me that he's going to be this great quarterback. I'm talking about in the NFL.
That's fair. I've never seen a 49er quarterback in the last five, six seasons put five healthy weeks together. So, I mean, you know, the amount of things that we haven't seen from this position is still a very long list.
Last thing I'll ask you, give me the fan perspective out there on the Athletics. And I know that it is just a bad situation. They're going to Las Vegas. I understand why you want to go to Vegas right now, but what does the Oakland Athletics fan feel right now?
The Oakland Athletics fan feels abused by the single worst owner in the history of North American sports. John Fisher is beyond derelict of duty. He is a no-talent son of a billionaire who wouldn't be able to feed himself if he were having to do that on his own. This scumbag owner of the first degree has literally run the playbook from the movie Major League, where he is so screwed over his own fans, made sure the stadium was hospitable as humanly possible, and has fielded a team that isn't even reminiscent truly of a minor league baseball team, much less a major league baseball team. It is disgusting. It is nauseous that a guy like this is allowed to function as an owner, that he is rewarded with new opportunities in what could be more fertile soil, while a guy like Steve Cohen, you know, gets punished for spending as much as possible because he wants to win. Now, neither exactly is getting the season that they thought they were going to get. Well, I can't say that because this is what John Fisher wanted. This is not just dying on the vine. Not only are the grapes dying, but John Fisher came back and salted the soil to make sure that the grapevines died as well. He is the worst thing that has ever happened in Major League Baseball from an ownership standpoint. And if he does get his stadium in Las Vegas the night before it opens, after everyone has left at the grand opening party, I hope the place burns down on him. Screw that guy. He is the worst. That's what's wrong with the Oakland A's. John Fisher.
How about that? Damon Bruce joining us on the Zach Gelb Show. Make sure you check out his YouTube channel, Damon Bruce Plus, and the Damon Bruce podcast. Subscribers going up by the second. Damon Bruce, thank you. Appreciate it.
Hey, you send that Gelb army my way, I'll be just fine. Thank you very much, Zach.
You got it. What a finish there by Damon Bruce. Holy smokes. I know the Athletics fan clearly is not happy when you are taking the team out of Oakland and going to the Vegas Strip. But man, he did not beat around the bush there. He was very, very direct. Do not let the door hit you on the ass on the way out and let the entire thing burn down with you. Oh my goodness gracious. That was something at the end. All righty, it is the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. I was reading this over at CBS Sports, NFL on CBS. Tyler Boyd, when he addressed reporters the other day, said, "I feel like if I would have played the whole game, I was the factor." And then he went on to say, "We would have won the game," going back to the AFC Championship game from this past year where the Kansas City Chiefs defeated the Cincinnati Bengals over at Burrowhead, which then ended up becoming Arrowhead once again. That's nice of Tyler Boyd to say. But I kind of hate when people do that. Like, it's kind of a loser mentality. And the Bengals the last few years have been a really solid organization. And they've been one of the better teams in the NFL. But it's very similar to Deebo Samuel still complaining about Brock Purdy getting hurt, and that's the reason why the Eagles won the game. Like, I don't think it mattered if Brock Purdy was the quarterback and got through that entire game. I thought the Eagles were the better team. Now, the Chiefs-Bengals, I like the Bengals going into the game, but it wasn't inconceivable that the Kansas City Chiefs were going to win that game. At Kansas City, I know they lost three in a row to the Cincinnati Bengals, but I'm not ready to say that if Tyler Boyd was healthy, even though he had a big catch and then got hurt, that the Bengals definitely would have won the game. But I was looking back at both those conference championship games. Usually, like, you like new blood, and you don't want to see the same matchup year in and year out. And the NFL never disappoints regardless. But I would actually be more than okay if we get the same Final Four teams this year, two from the AFC, two from the NFC, on Conference Championship Sunday. Like, if we got another rematch of Cincinnati going up against Kansas City, sign me up. With Mahomes going up against Burrow. And you look at it, for a while we were kind of told, oh, the new great rivalry in the AFC is Cincinnati, is Buffalo going up against Kansas City. It's really Cincinnati going up against Kansas City. I know we had that classic division around game from 2 years ago. You had a AFC title game between Buffalo and Kansas City. Good start because Buffalo took a lead, and then Kansas City, just what they did each and every game that year, they did come on back. But you look at Chiefs and Bengals, we've seen Cincinnati, when it's mattered, win. We've not seen that from the Buffalo Bills yet. Now, Cincinnati did lose to Kansas City this past year, but the year prior, they won the AFC title game. And they won three straight games before this past year's AFC championship. And I do believe the two best quarterbacks in football right now are Mahomes 1 and Burrow's 2. That's no disrespect to guys like Jalen Hurts or Josh Allen, but I would love to see that AFC championship rematch again. Like, I'm not going to be disappointed if it's someone else, but that is usually a phenomenal game. And in the NFC, Philadelphia is the best team in the NFC on paper, in my opinion. And that's not like a big, bold take. But if we got to see Eagles 49ers again, I wouldn't be disappointed at that, because those are, on paper, the two best teams in the NFC. And I know it usually doesn't go down that way. And I know it's kind of lame to say, oh, let's see the same AFC and NFC title game matchups again. And if we got Eagles and Chiefs in the Super Bowl again, I don't think anyone would be disappointed. However, tell me going into the season that there's a better team that you would want to swap out than those four. Like, on paper, they may not have the best roster, but with what they've done, Kansas City's the best team in the NFL until proven otherwise. And then you look at the AFC, if you had to say who's the second best team, it's Cincinnati. And in the NFC, Eagles are 1, and the 49ers are 2. So if I had to swap out one of those teams and just say you can't get the same four teams, who would you want to see in the AFC and who would you want to see in the NFC? I'm not going to take out Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs. I'm just not. So if you told me that the Bengals weren't going to get there, then I want to see Buffalo. And in the NFC, I'm not going to take out the Eagles. If I were to take out someone, it would be the 49ers. And I think this is going to surprise a lot of people, because I call this team the Drama Dallas Choking Cowboys. But if we could get an Eagles-Cowboys NFC title game, Philly would be the preference. But if it's in Dallas, that's fine. And I don't think it will be in Dallas, because the Eagles are going to win that division. Imagine that being the NFC title game. And you almost got it last year. Because if Dak Prescott could have just elevated his game, his defense did everything to put the Cowboys in a situation to get back to their first NFC title game since, what, 1995? So that's what I would kind of be hoping for this year. I would like to see Chiefs against Bengals, 49ers against Eagles, but, if you can't get the same four teams and you have to swap out one, I wouldn't mind seeing Buffalo and Kansas City, and I definitely would not mind seeing the Philadelphia Eagles up against the Dallas Cowboys, because that would be a war. With those two fan bases and the animosity there, especially if you get that game in South Philadelphia, that would be a scene and a building that you would want to be in attendance for, because that would be just absolute mayhem. It is the Zach Yelp Show on CBS Sports Radio. We'll take a timeout. When we do come on back, the difference of Jimmy Butler in Miami, we'll delve into that on the other side. Still to come, Scott Hastings will join us at 8:20 p.m. Eastern, 5:20 p.m. Pacific, and at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. Keith Smith, who covers the NBA and the Boston Celtics, will join us as well. The Zach Yelp Show returns in 5.